Hello and welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. It's likely that any member of the Payments Journal audience, whether it's banks, fintechs, technology providers, CFO, literally anyone whose business will be impacted by the intersection of cloud computing and payments connectivity will enjoy today's episode. We're joined today by the three authorities on the intersection, Nilesh Desain, head of institutional payments at Amazon Web Services, Matt Luce of the Swift Network strategy team, as well as Mercator Advisor Group's own director of commercial and enterprise payments, Steve Murphy. The conversation opens with Matt providing an update on the Swift landscape, the adoption of ISO 20022, and its intersection with real-time payments, AI, fraud, and data management is a repeated theme throughout the conversation. Nilesh details the dual importance of meeting the needs of new payment systems as well as time to market, particularly with AI and machine learning. The conversation concludes with a glimpse ahead, and interoperability is the key word as the future of CBDCs, stablecoins, regulated and unregulated securities comes into focus. Without further ado, let's take it to the show. So, Matt, what's Swift hearing from their customers across segments? What are the pain points and how are they being addressed by technology and in particular by the cloud?
It's a great question. And I think generally speaking, we hear consistency across the board from all clients around trying to improve that end-to-end customer experience. And this comes from an extremely competitive payments landscape that's kind of grown over the last, you know, 5-10 years and continues to grow. And the focus on that customer experience requires you now to invest in ways to do things more efficiently. Cloud is a great opportunity. And, you know, all of our clients probably have some sort of a cloud strategy, either short-term, medium-term, or long-term. It allows you to be more efficient. It allows you to scale with efficiency. It also allows you to be a lot more flexible. And when you combine it with other technologies such as APIs and AI and the rest, and you start combining these technologies, it really starts creating a different experience behind the scenes, which can create a much better and different experience up front. At Swift, you know, our number one kind of focus and strategy and vision is creating an instant and frictionless world for cross-border transactions. And these technologies are going to be required to do that in various forms. You know, one of the things that's foundational to what, you know, leads to opportunities is obviously the creation of ISO 20022. We see that as really table stakes. You know, the industry in many areas has been going through a conversion of that at market infrastructure levels across the globe for many, many years. At Swift now, the community made a decision a few years ago that Swift needs to fully, from a messaging perspective, go to an ISO 20022 message format. We will start that journey later this year. I call it a journey because it will take many years for the industry to completely translate into an ISO 20022 format. But what that will give us is an opportunity for much more structured and consistent data, more data as well, but more data in a structured format, which will open up opportunities for more efficiencies on the back end, different solutions that you can offer clients on the front end. And, you know, kind of linking it all back to my opening message, it's really all about creating a better and improved end-to-end experience. And there's a variety of technologies. Cloud is critical. Cloud will open up opportunities, right, over the next few years and continue to. But it's, you know, with a combination of some of those other technologies I mentioned as well.
So, Matt, just, I guess, a more specific follow-up on that same vein of questions, which is kind of the industry progress towards the Swift starting of conversion. I think it's November of this year. How is the industry adapting? What sort of approaches are they taking?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're seeing really good adaption. Obviously, it will be dependent upon the institution size and scale, right? We'll see this happening over many years. Obviously, this is also being led by many market infrastructures that are, you know, moving to ISO, with Europe going this year and, you know, countries following in different phases over the next few years. So you'll see this phased in. Clients are ready. You know, I came from a very large financial institution in my past. We've been looking at this for quite a long time because obviously we saw this as the future years ago. And it opens up, right, as well in that need for speed. I call, right, that instant frictionless. There's this need for speed in transactions. We're getting there domestically. We have some work to do in the cross-border space, but we will get there as well. And many of the RTP systems, most of them, I would almost say a majority of anyone that's being created now, is built on an ISO format. So as we start looking, and we'll talk about later, the interoperability of real-time payment systems and what that can bring to cross-border transactions as well, having them in a consistent format is going to make that process much easier to implement over time.
And maybe this is more for Nilesh, but is there a greater interest in RTP because of the ISO 20022 conversions that are going on? Are you seeing any of that?
Absolutely. So from an AWS perspective, we are looking at two macro trends. Number one is the payments industry in general, like Matt said, is moving towards the ISO 20022 standard. And the driving factor behind it is better data, more data to improve the overall customer experience. So that's one macro trend. The second macro trend we are seeing is in the domestic markets all over the world, there are real-time payment systems coming up and being built to offer domestic real-time payments to the consumers or businesses. Where AWS comes into the picture is offering cloud connectivity to the market infrastructures all over the world, such as Swift and other real-time payment systems, to do two things. Number one is meet the needs of new customers or customers with new payment needs. And then the second is faster time to market. So market infrastructures who are building newer payment systems or real-time payment systems, they'd like their customers, which could be banks, payment companies, to be able to connect to those new payment systems via cloud and be up and running as fast as possible. And that's where AWS is helping our payment customers either to upgrade them to new ISO 20022 standards or to offer them cloud connectivity to the new payment systems that are being built all over the world.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Nilesh, staying with you and the themes of meeting the needs of new payment systems and time to market, what's the intersection there with AI and machine learning, and how does that fit into, you know, improving customer experience, automating processes, reducing risk, and more?
Sure. So data is a big priority for our customers, and we are hearing that across the board. And one of the main things we are hearing is how can AWS help our customers derive more value from the data that they have. And that's where our AI ML services become extremely important, where we work with our customers to help them bring together structured and unstructured data. Structured data could be in a relational database. Unstructured data could be in like freeform text, emails, things like that. So AWS helps our customers bring those two things together. And then we have our services like SageMaker and others, which can be used to help our customers drive or derive more and more value from the data that they have. And this data can be used for a whole variety of purposes in payments or in non-payments use cases.
Now, I know a lot of banks and others use things like payments hubs and so on and so forth. And how do they interact with you, AWS, Nilesh?
Sure. So partners are a big component of our go-to-market strategy, and we rely on partners quite a bit to build what we call as customer-facing solutions, whether those customer-facing solutions are for banks or for payment companies. Partners, ISVs, systems integrators, they use the core infrastructure, core services that AWS offers to meet or build solutions for our customers.
So I'm wondering, maybe this is more for you, Matt. Is there any specific way that you're seeing that banks are using the data? Any particular approaches or use cases?
Yeah, I think in general, right, if I think about AI as well and machine learning has been used for decades in the banking industry and specific in payments, focusing on kind of the simple straight through processing, repeat errors, how do you replace them? Obviously now AI allows you to do that in different ways, but in general, we're really focused on what we call anomaly detection. So how can you use data, historical data and large sums of historical data to try to understand whether a transaction you get this minute fits a profile or does not. And that anomaly can be for a variety of reasons. It could be for fraudulent reasons. It could be for anti-money laundering reasons. It could be for sanctions reasons. It could be for, you know, any particular reason. But starting there and trying to prove out how data and AI on top of that data can start showing you where you have anomalies. And then this gets really interesting. Obviously, at Swift, we've got a large sum of data processing large volume of transactions every day for our clients. It's not our data. It's our clients' data. It's the bank's data, you know, but we've been, you know, securely trying to figure out how to use that in a meaningful way. But on top of that, how we can then create foundational AI infrastructure and models that then banks can add their own data to and make it even more powerful. So leverage the historical data outside of their own network that is secure and safe, right, and, you know, anonymized and used in different ways, and then add on their own. When you start combining the power of data from the industry and data that's specific to the organization, it gets pretty interesting on what you can do. So data is critical. It's data to me, you know, I always joke, you know, why do all these companies in the world Why are so many companies trying to get into payments for the last couple of decades or last decade? I've been in payments for a long time. It's always interested me, but I've always been fascinated by the obsession with payments and transactions. And I came to a conclusion a while back. Nobody really outside of banking nerds like myself and payment nerds really care about payments and transactions. Everybody realizes that the value of that payment data is massive, right? Knowing what everybody purchases and what they're buying, right? It leads to what they're doing, leads to this new world of, you know, interconnectivity in a different way in social media. So, you know, for transactions, it's powerful. We've got to be careful how we use it. And I think banks have always been very careful in that way as well. And that's why they've been probably a little bit behind in using data to enhance capabilities, because there's a trust factor there, right? This data, most of the time, is not their data. It's their clients' data. And, you know, that's how we see it as an industry. So securing it and making sure we do it in a meaningful and secure way is really critical as well.
So it's interesting. You had mentioned anomalies, and this could be for either one of you to follow up on, but that directs me towards something like fraud, AML, KYC. Are there sort of other uses within anomalies for credit purposes or other transactional purposes that might fall into that category?
I'll take it first, for sure. I think it's something, because of the role we play at Swift right now, we're not as focused on, to be honest. You know, looking at it from a pure transactional payment perspective, obviously we've got securities transactions as well. And there's things you can do in there that become quite interesting. Looking at trends, especially in this market where we start seeing some trends that seem out of the norm, right, and have caused spikes in different ways with different market actions. So there is a lot you can do outside of that, credit for sure. I mean, let's look at all the buy now, pay later. Let's be honest. This is just great technology companies coming up with an amazing algorithm that is probably more powerful than banks have had in the credit departments for the last 20 years, and looking at thousands of parameters in real time to make credit decisions instantly, right, on a buy now, pay later type example. So I think there's a ton of use cases for it across the financial services industry.
And just to add to that, the way we think about these steps are, you know, individual processes within a payment transaction, if you will, right? So like what Matt was saying, instant credit decisioning for a buy now, pay later type process. We have customers who are using AWS services to make those instant decisions while the customer is in that online, call it checkout flow. Similarly, in a different part of our payment transactions, there might be needs to do KYC or additional, you know, verification of identity or other things that are necessary for the payment to be successful. And what we are seeing is technologies like AIML can perform a very important function to analyze lots and lots of data at scale in a way where it doesn't become exorbitantly expensive for a bank or for a payment company to run those models. And the scale at which AWS can operate helps our customers to run those models very quickly, very fast, and analyze lots and lots of data to come up with those decisions, say for a buy now, pay later credit decisioning process or other payment process.
Thanks for the specifics. I think that provides a lot of insight for those listening.
Matt, this next question is for you, but I'd like to sort of reference back to some of what Nilesh had mentioned. You know, you mentioned time to market as being, you know, a key advantage, and of course how AWS can analyze lots and lots of data. And the connection I'm making is that maybe like doing that on your own or just using AI and ML, period, is time intensive and certainly data intensive. The other part of Nilesh's earlier statement, though, was that we're working to meet the needs of new payment systems. I'd like to kind of go there. How is Swift supporting emerging payment and interoperability with new payment networks?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the key word there is interoperability. If I think about, you know, next year, Swift will turn 50 years old. And, you know, if you look at the history of Swift, where have we had success? And to me, I focus on that interoperability. Now, interoperability comes with other caveats to be successful that luckily we've had, which is the safety and security of a large global network. But with that, right, we are really focused on what is interoperability of the future look like. And you really kind of hit the nail on the head. The reality, at least in the short term, but I have a feeling this could be for quite a long time, the fragmentation in the payments landscape globally is going to continue to increase. Now, we've been looking at things, you know, like real-time payments, right, and looking at how we connect and interconnect real-time payment systems. We've got a program, right, that Alessia and team are involved in as well with TCH and EBA, looking at how we can connect with a protocol called IXB. How do we connect to real-time payment systems for cross-border settlement? We've also been extremely focused on, as we know now, right, and even most recently, if everybody saw the BIS report on the future of monetary systems and the focus on central bank digital currencies, right? Central bank digital currencies probably are a reality in many markets in the coming years. They obviously exist already in some markets, right? And you hear almost 9 out of 10 central banks are thinking about it and looking at it. And, you know, we've done some experiments starting last year and into this year, looking at, well, what would that interoperability look like, connecting obviously straight from one central bank digital currency into another, but with the reality you're going to go from fiat to central bank digital currency to possibly, you know, a regulated stable coin, and one transaction may touch, you know, four different pay types because it jumps through multiple markets and multiple parties, and they all want to settle and transact in different ways. And so how we do that interoperability is going to be critical for our success in the future. And I think the industry and the global economy's success. And so it's why we're focused on it. Traditionally, that's been through messaging. I don't think that's going to go away in the very, very short term. But, you know, there are different ways to do that technically. You know, a gateway like we're looking at with the CBDCs to help within the actual infrastructure, give them code to actually be able to translate very easily into other networks. Looking at as well, right, the interconnectivity directly into market infrastructures because of this instant nature. You've got to do things in different ways to keep that speed end-to-end real cross-border. And so it's exciting time to think about all the options that are going to continue to exist and all the work we need to do to figure it out. But that, you know, that's why I, you know, came to SWIFT to help solve these big problems that are exciting to solve. And right, and it's going to take partnerships with companies such as Amazon and others, right, to help the whole industry come to a conclusion that's better than where we are today.
Yeah, just to add on to the fragmentation point that Matt mentioned, I think at a global level, what we are seeing is depending on the customer needs, the way a customer can make payments are going to be different. So there could be bank account to bank account transactions, there could be card transactions, there could be mobile transactions. And what that leads to is different payment networks, call it mini payment networks, getting created all over the world. And interoperability is extremely important so that, you know, one payment can go from one payment network to another payment network, like Matt said. But the other part to that, which is also equally important, is what is the cost of someone being able to connect to these payment networks? And is that cost so high that the customers, in our case, banks and payment companies, might choose not to connect to those payment networks? And that's where what AWS does is we offer not only the cloud connectivity that I mentioned earlier, but also the scalable and effective onboarding processes for financial institutions. So that way, depending on where they'd like to connect to, we can easily help them connect to the appropriate network and then run the process or the payment process that they're interested in. And that's what will, along with interoperability, will enable these different payment networks to service the needs that they are trying to cater towards.
So Matt had mentioned an interesting project that I think a lot of listeners may be, you know, to the extent you can talk about it, but the EBA clearing and TCH effort, along with SWIFT and I believe AWS involved as well, in terms of connecting Europe and the U.S. real-time payment systems. Is there something you can talk about to update everybody on where that's at? And are there any other similar types of efforts underway?
Yeah, so I can start. You know, to me, it's simple level, the idea there, and I think Dilesh was kind of hinting at it earlier in his last answer, right, was the cost to join all these real-time payment networks for each individual organization is massive. Although, right, some of the times they have similar protocols, formats, each one is different and has a cost to join and create technical connectivity too. So the idea with the IXB program is if you're a member of one, can you then use that membership and that connectivity to settle in the other networks very easily and reuse that connectivity as much as possible? And so that's where we're at. We did a very early POC last year at the end of the year. This year, the goal is to have live transactions, right, processed using this model and then scale it up by the end of 2023. It definitely starts obviously with the US, Europe and TCH and EBA, but you know, ultimately our goal is to add other real-time payment networks over time as well. And, you know, do this at a multilateral level as time persists. I think you've got to prove it out in a mature market that you can scale But then ultimately, how do you move it to multiple markets? And there will be different models. And how do you keep it flexible enough to cater for different models that may exist in different markets?
Yeah, the only other thing I will add to what makes this type of initiative more very interesting and attractive is market infrastructures on both sides of the transaction, like the clearinghouse and EBA clearing, are driving these initiatives along with the help from SWIFT and technology companies like AWS. And as you know, market infrastructures are very familiar how to meet the regulations that are required for any type of a payment that goes through their networks. So from a scale standpoint, I think this is a very interesting approach to take in terms of, you know, meeting the regulatory needs, but also banks are already part of these clearinghouse networks on both sides of the transaction, right? So there are a bunch of banks who are a part of the clearinghouse network, and there are a bunch of banks who are a part of the EBA clearing network. And there won't be, and this is what we'll prove out as a part of this pilot, which is there won't be a significantly more cost involved in having these banks on both sides of the transaction consume these new services that we are contemplating.
Okay, thanks. Great update.
Well, gents, thank you so much for sharing your expertise today. I feel like we covered a ton of ground from a number of different perspectives. Looking forward to, you know, sharing with our audience.
Thank you.
Thank you.